It's that time of year, the old tradition started by Art Bell that we have carried through ghost to ghost here on Coast to Coast AM. So just dim your lights, open up a candle, light up a candle, and enjoy. If you're driving, well, be very careful about the eyes that you see in your rear view mirror. I'm going to start this with a story. And then we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the rest of your stories, and we're going to be doing Ghost to Ghost for 3 hours now. We talk about ghosts, and we've talked about ghosts on this program for a long, long time, and we've talked about the afterlife and everything else. It was a story of an individual, and he was married, and, you know, like 50% of the married couples out there, they have some problems. Maybe more. But these problems were pretty big. And this woman wasn't very happy in her relationship. She wasn't happy with her life. And so while they were sleeping, she woke up. She went out to the garage. And she tried to kill herself. She went into the car, turned on the engine, had the garage door closed, and this was about it. The man tells the story that in the dead of the night, he was fast asleep, somebody woke him up. Something woke him up. I said, I could see as clearly as day a person in my room trying to shake me, Bob, wake up. Bob, wake up. And he did. He looked around. He didn't see his wife. But he could hear the sound of a car engine. He went downstairs to investigate. He said, geez, well, what is this? You know, we've had some fights and things, but I never thought she would do this. And he saw her passed out in the driver's side of the car. He pulled her out, shut off the car, opened up the garage door, called 911, and they came and they took her. And she lived. They're not married anymore, but she's still alive. Saved by some entity that woke up her husband. I mean, that just gives me the chills. Anyways, that's my story. We'll get to yours in a moment on Coast to Coast and Ghost to Ghost AM. Okay, welcome back to Ghost to Ghost. I'm George Norrie, and this is your program. You're the storyteller here tonight. So let's go to the phones and let's check in with Cheryl in Lexington, Kentucky to get things started. Hi, Cheryl. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Looking forward to this night.
Me too.
Go ahead.
Okay, so my story took place at the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield.
Oh, and,
yeah, that ginormously creepy prison. And I was there with a friend, and we were doing a self-guided tour. And had been in there for several hours. If you've ever been there, you know it's really large. It takes a long time to get through. And at one point, we just kind of separated. She went to go look at something. I went somewhere else and didn't really think anything about it. But I was wandering through kind of a hallway that's kind of narrow. It's the hallway that apparently the inmates come down after they were fingerprinted. They come down this aisle onto the cell block. And I had gone through it kind of backwards. So I was in the fingerprint area, and then I was turning around and going back through the hallway, and I all of a sudden had this very drained sensation, like I was so tired all of a sudden, I just wanted to lay on the floor. It was really strange, and I didn't, you know, but I decided I need to get out of this area. So I was kind of walking down the hall, and you go down the stairs, and that leads onto the cell block. And as I turned the corner onto the cell block, I all of a sudden had this overwhelming feeling that and the emotions that weren't mine. I just had this feeling I'm never, ever going to get out of here again. You know, I'm stuck here. And I realized, or at least I assumed I was somehow picking up on a former inmate. And so that's basically the story. I got very overwhelmed with emotion that wasn't mine. And just for it seemed like a long time, but it was probably just a minute or two, was just shaking and scared with this emotion that wasn't mine, and looking at the cell block in such a way as I can only assume an inmate would as they were being put into prison for the first time.
Well, and what's so amazing, Cheryl, these stories you just never forget. Let's go east of the Rockies. Uh-oh, this could be the first. This has happened in a long, long time. Is this JC?
How dare you, Mr. Norris?
We thought you were dead.
The rumors of JC's demise are greatly exaggerated by the communist cross-dressers in this country. And I'm here to tell you, this is J.C. Webster III, God's 10-star general in the war against Halloween and demonetry and demonism. And that's what you're doing tonight, George. You're summoning up and conjuring demons with these ghost stories.
Did you wear a costume tonight, J.C.?
How dare you insult me in such a manner? I would never stoop so low to participate in this putrid pagan ritual called Halloween. Now, George, you listen here. You don't know much about Halloween, do you?
I know a lot about Halloween. JC, it's fun. There are little kids in the neighborhood dressed up like goblins and trick-or-treating. They're having a good time.
That's right. You think no further than dressing up your kids in funny masks and sending them out door to door. But it's a pagan ritual, George. This goes back to the dawn of time, before history, to the Druids. The Druids in Stonehenge, and the Druids would go door to door, demanding blood sacrifices from the homeowners, oftentimes using their bathrooms and clogging up their facilities, willfully, George, so that the sewage would pour over into the streets. And I'm going to tell you, George, this trick-or-treating, as you know, it is nothing more than strong-arm coercion and robbery. Now listen, you dress your kids up in costumes and you send them out to threaten your neighbor, either hand over the candy or you're going to get tripped. Now how many of these kids end up in prison? What percentage of people in prison today were kids who trick-or-treated? It's a deadly crime, George.
We all trick-or-treated, JC. Have you ever found Edna, by the way?
The stab in a man's heart on this pagan ritual, let me tell you, George. And you think you became the crime lord the dawn of Halloween. Look how you turned out. And as far as that goes, how dare you bring up such a sensitive subject on such a soulless night? You have no soul, Mr. Norton. You're evil. You're terrible, man. Terrible.
JC, it's good to hear from you again. Boy, I thought this guy, we all did, had passed away. It has been a long, long time. Well, what a way to kick off Ghost to Ghost with a little visit from JC. About a month ago, we had on our Coast to Coast website solicitations for your stories for Ghost to Ghost. And producer Tom, of course, sorted through thousands and thousands of emails of ghost stories, and one of them came from Stephen in Wichita, Kansas, and Stephen's with us right now. Stephen, thanks for joining us, and what's your story, Stephen?
And a very spirited Halloween to you.
You too, Stephen.
I used to not believe in vampires, but after an encounter in Perth, Australia, I am not so sure.
Oh, what happened there?
I was in the Navy and on a Westpac cruise in 1984. One of our port calls was in Perth, Australia. Beautiful place, great people, and at least back then, Americans were popular. There was also a goth craze going on among the younger people. The first night in port, the city threw a party for us in a large warehouse on the dock. Unless you had duty, you had to be there. It was December, close to Christmas, so it was summer down under, and the uniform for the party was the summer casual dress, which was 46 and below. Black slacks, short sleeve white shirt, and ribbons. You probably remember it well.
I do.
It made a strange sight, young sailors in their uniforms among many of the local youths and goths. I was standing in the middle of the warehouse, not engaged in conversation or dancing, when I had a strange urge to look towards the entrance. So I stood there for what seemed a few minutes looking at the door and wondering why. I was about to look away when two young ladies walked in and grabbed my attention. They were in goth with very white skin. I watched them make their way through the room. Couldn't really take my eyes off of them. And I realized if they kept their present course, they would pass close to me. As they got closer, I noticed their pale skin was very white, like the color of a channel catfish belly. When they got close, I noticed their eyes were normal. Then one of them seemed to make a point of brushing against me. I have never felt anyone so cold. She was so cold, I wondered how she could be alive. The phrase cold as ice came to mind. She was probably at least 15 degrees cooler than the room temperature. And the skin was actually that pale. There was no powder transfer when she rubbed against me. After she passed, I turned to look at her departing. She turned her head and looked back at me and smiled. And there was a sudden feeling in my head that gave way to the thoughts, I know you know, but who'd believe you? Then she turned her head away and continued through the room with a friend. I checked with the chief corpsman the next day, and he told me no one came to sick bay with anything unusual. And the chief master at arms said no one was UA, so we had no victims. As I said, I used to not believe in vampires. But after that encounter, I can't swear to it.
Stephen, great story. Great story indeed. And we're going to be taking your ghost stories all night long. All night long. Now, this is not open lines, so there's not going to be a lot of interaction between you and me. I'm not going to be probing you and questioning you. This is your night. These are your stories. Let's go to Jennifer in California. Hi, Jennifer. Happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween, George.
Thank you.
I just want to say really quickly, this, I've been listening to you for 10 years, and this is the first time I've called, and I'm very thrilled to share my story. It occurred when I was a freshman in college at William Jewell in Liberty, Missouri. Now, my folks live in St. Louis, and the drive from St. Louis to Kansas City is approximately about 3.5 hours on I-70. We had what's called winterim, which is right between first and second semester break, which is usually the first 2 weeks of January. And unfortunately, I drove back in the worst snowstorm of 1993 during the first week of January. A drive that would normally take about 3.5 hours took almost six. Mm. And what was cool about attending Jewell is that you had these 2 weeks to basically take one class, but then also the fraternities and sororities worked together to kind of put together a, we called it Tatler Review, but essentially a variety act. So we were all really excited about getting back to school when the campus opened on Sunday night. Now, mind you, we'd been off for 3 or so weeks for Christmas break. Campus is completely silent. No one is there. We're all getting back into our fraternity houses, sorority houses, and dorms on campus, and we're excited about connecting. So a little history about William Jewell. It's one of the oldest liberal arts college west of the Mississippi. And Jewell Hall was actually used as a hospital during the Civil War. A lot of great history in that part of western Missouri. So to make a long story short, I, myself, and a couple of pledge sisters walked in 2 feet of snow across campus through the main quad to the Kappa Alpha House, which was the fraternity that we were going to be working on Tatler Review with. And of course, what happens in college is you party and you dance and you have a great time. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was exhausted. I had driven 6 hours, slipping and sliding all the way from St. Louis to Kansas City, and was ready to go back to my dorm and go to sleep for the night. Well, none of my sorority sisters wanted to go with me, so I'm like, well, forget this, and I'm just going to go off by myself. Now, to get back to where my freshman dorm was at the time, I had to go up the extremely tall hill where Jewell Hall, which was the main kind of the iconic building, is. And as I'm walking up through 2 feet of snow through these stairs, there, mind you, no one is on campus. No one's been there for 3 weeks. It is snowing. It is silent. And you know what that sounds like when you hear that silence. And as I'm walking up, I see a light in the third story window of Jewel Hall. And I'm thinking, that I don't think that's a classroom. Maybe that's one of the professors. Maybe one of the, well, why would a professor be there at, 2 o'clock in the morning, right before winterem? That just makes no sense. So I'm getting closer and closer. And I'm, and it's not like an entire room is illuminated. It's like a candle. And as I get closer, Jewel Hall, again, one of our main buildings, founded in 1849. At that time, there were padlocks on the doors and a chain around each of the main doors getting into the building.
Right.
And as I get closer, I hear this. And as I get closer, I hear this. Which sounds like the doors are going back and forth and back and forth. All of a sudden, I hear what can only sound like 20 men in boots coming down, running down the stairs that run on either side of the building. And I see, as I'm walking, trying to run at this point, hearing this, thinking maybe this is just the wind, I see, George, I see the doors go back and forth, like something is trying to get out of Jewel Hall. Let me tell you, in 2 feet of snow in the middle of the night, I ran, I don't know how far, faster than you would ever, ever believe. And I have never shared this story with anybody until this moment right now. Scared.
One of those feet don't fail me now. Jennifer, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Going to continue with your ghost-to-ghost stories. Those of you from Kentucky and California, Texas and Ohio, stick with us. We'll be back with you in just a moment, right here on Ghost-to-Ghost AM. Okay, it's Ghost-to-Ghost time. Let's go west now. Joe's with us in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Joe, what's your story?
Hey, how you doing, George? Great talking to you.
You too, Joe.
Friends of my fiance and I went camping in a lake near a lake in the Sierras, and it was really nice for 4 days. And on the fifth day, they woke up, and it was kind of overcast and gloomy, and they both felt like it was a little bit weird. And this girl that my fiance's friend, she was taking pictures all day in the morning, and then they took some pictures later on. But they went for a walk, and they said it felt really weird. They were walking near the lake, and all of a sudden, my friend said something felt like something grabbed him and pulled him in the lake. Something invisible just grabbed him, pulled him in the lake, and he was in the lake and, like, fluttering around, screaming, and, he couldn't get out. Finally, his girlfriend came, got him out of the lake. They were really freaked out by it. They're just like, this is so weird. They're just like, nobody else was around. They went to their campsite, packed everything up, and took off. My friend, she went and got her pictures developed of all the things she took. And every day, everything was nice for all the pictures of the days, except for that day when she took pictures around her. And she took pictures of the clouds in the sky. And on that day, the clouds in the sky, when she got the pictures back, they were all demonic skulls. All the clouds were just demonic-looking skulls and stuff. And it was really scary, and it totally freaked her out, and she totally burned the pictures and stuff, but not before she showed us the pictures and stuff. And they were genuinely really freaking scary.
Super. Joe, thanks for sharing that with us.
Hey, have a great Halloween, George, and thank you, Tommy, for getting me on.
You too. Absolutely. Now, here's one of our email stories from the website. Let's go to Cody in Winchester, Kentucky. Cody, happy Halloween to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks, George. You too.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm coming from a kind of smaller town in Kentucky, and like most smaller towns, we have a kind of a haunted place. And out here, it's called Ghost Bridge, and it's it was kind of run down back in high school. It it had holes in it. Really wasn't safe to cross. But the story was that if you drove out across it on the full moon at midnight, that your car would stall and ghosts come. Well, one night we decided to go out there on a full moon, and my friend had this really old Bronco, And, you know, we were like, yeah, just drive that. You know, that won't cost money to replace it. So he drove it out across, and about halfway, it stalled. And when he opened the door, if he would have just stepped out, he would have actually fallen through this large hole in the bridge.
Oh, jeez.
So we all pushed it back off the bridge, ran back into town and got a jumper for his car, came back out, jumped it. And when his lights came on, we saw this figure at the other end of the bridge, and it was glowing like moonlight. So a few of us started walking out towards it. And when we got about halfway out across the bridge, you know, I could make out what it was. It looked like a little girl sitting with her knees up to her chest and just this long flowing black hair covering up her face. And as we got a little bit closer, we heard this noise, and the only way I can describe it is like the noise from The Grudge, you know, the that noise.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other because apparently we all heard it, and that was all that we needed. And we just got back in the cars and flew back into town.
I love it. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, Cody.
Thanks. You too, George.
That one was that was a creepy story. Absolutely creepy story. John in Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hey, John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George, long-time listener. First time I got through.
Thank you, sir.
It's a cold and rainy, creepy, windy night here up around Lake Erie, I tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I got two stories, really. One, the first one that I told your screener about was a little ghost boy. And me and my brother were sleeping. I was back home from college on break, and we were sleeping in the living room after watching TV. I was on the couch, and he's on the floor, and he doesn't hear much of anything, but when he does, you know, he doesn't remember the next day. And he starts screaming, "Get this little kid away from me. Get this kid away from me." And I'm like, "What the heck is he talking about?" And it was calling our names. And I roll over from the couch and I look over, and there's this little boy dressed like the Dutch boy kind of era. And he just looked at us and he just called our name and he smiled and then he disappeared. Well, next morning at breakfast, we were sitting around talking, and one time my brother actually remembered something. He goes, "Who let that darn kid in the house last night? He was driving me nuts." And my mother looked at me, and my sister looked at me, and they go, "You see him too?" And I'm like, "Oh, my God, are you kidding me?" And my brother goes, yeah, who let that kid in? Who let him stay over?" And that's it. We never mentioned it again. And if I can real quick, the other one, my company moved me and my wife down to West Virginia, and I hunt and fish, and we bought a 40-acre farm out there in the mountains. And it was right by hunting season. It started up right after we bought the place. So first day, opening day, I hunted till, you know, from morning till about an hour before dark, and I'm walking through the path. It's an old logging road on my property, and I'm carrying my gun over my shoulder with my hand holding it, and bam, all of a sudden my arm just nudges, the gun from the butt of the gun, and everything just nudged, and I was like, maybe I hit a briar. And I looked around. I'm like, no, this path is wide. There's nothing on it. It did it again. I took another step. It did it again. And I said, oh, my God, please make this go away. I took another step. Nothing happened. I took off running down the hill back to the house. And next day I did a better check of the property. I found a family graveyard on the mountain. And one of the graves was a Civil War sergeant from the he was from the South.
Oh my.
And I'm a northerner. I'm a Yankee transplant when I was down there, I guess. And I was like, oh my God, he didn't want me there.
Not at all.
No, not at all. And we went up to the I went up to the graveyard, and I said my piece at the place, and I'm here. I'm not here to mess with anything and this and that. And to this day, I still think about it, gives me the chills. But that day I just asked God, please make it go away, and it stopped. And I'm about a 200-pound man, and I never booked it through the woods so fast in my whole life. So
I love it. Yeah, you still own that property, or did you sell it?
No, we sold it. We moved back here to Ohio. We're home. We've been home for like 15 years now. But it was just creepy. And I took my buddies up there, and my one buddy goes, "Oh, cool." He goes, "There's a vet up there." He goes, "Let's dig it up. There's Civil War stuff in there, like buttons and stuff from his coat." I said, "If you touch it, you bought the property. It's yours." I said, "Because I'm leaving."
I love it. John, enjoy the weekend.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, George. Take care.
You got it. Great story. Next up, we go to Caesar in Sleep Hollow, Illinois. Hey, that's a great area. Caesar, go ahead.
Yes, George.
Hi.
I do enjoy your program.
Thank you, sir.
This goes back. Well, my wife and I were married, and we bought our first home in 1978 in Chicago. And during the purchase, my wife really got to know the former seller, Mrs. Shire. She was the original owner of the property, and she lived with her husband there for the last 40 years. And so the house was really built before World War II. Not only she lived in the house that we purchased, she grew up in the house next door, which belonged to her parents. She knew quite a lot about the area. And my wife, who was really involved with the local historical society, really tapped her ear about how the neighborhood developed. During the next spring, we started cleaning the yard, and I found the cement and metal lawn roller under the porch. I decided to move to the back of the lot because a junk man was coming. As I was moving it across the yard, my neighbor next door was surprised to see the roller because Mrs. Shire's husband had died moving that same roller the year before. So I was a little creeped out because Mrs. Shire never mentioned that when we bought the property. That very same night, I fell asleep in my Lazy Boy watching the Cubs, which is probably scary enough. During the night, I heard the doorknob rattling on the back door. And I woke up to see who was at the door, and standing on the porch was a man with a brim hat and a tan jacket with a very large key ring. As I tried to open up the door to confront him, my hand went through the doorknob. I was quite shocked. I looked back. I was actually still asleep in my Lazy Boy. And then I woke up and I realized I had dreamed the whole event. I then joined my wife in bed, who had gone to sleep earlier because she is a Sox fan, I might add. And the next day we woke up and she mentioned to me that she had dreamed the same night about a man with a brimmed hat and a jacket walking through the hallway near our bedroom. And we thought it was a little creepy because we had a very similar dream, but the man actually looked like a character we had seen on TV on the Rockford Files. So we just concluded that we had been impressed by that episode and had dreamed about the same character. Later that same day, we had a surprise visit from Mrs. Shire. She was visiting Chicago, and she brought some photos to my wife because she knew of her love of history. And the photos were pictures of her and the old neighborhood before it was fully developed. One of the photos showed a very young Mrs. Shire standing next to her husband, who was holding up a key ring. This was the day they moved into our house. When the man with the key ring holding up was standing looking into the camera. And although the photo was in black and white, her husband was the very same man with the tan coat and was wearing the same brim hat. I looked at my wife's eyes and I knew she recognized the man as well. We never told Mrs. Shire about the visit from her departed husband. And we were not sure if he came back because we had moved his lawn roller or he knew his wife was in the area. We lived there another 10 years, and happily, we never saw the ghost with the brim hat again.
I love it. Good job, Caesar.
All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, my friend. Enjoy Halloween. Good job indeed. Time for a few more calls, then we'll be at the top of the hour, but we'll have two more hours to go here of Ghost to Ghost for you. By the way, I'm in St. Louis. It is freezing out. It's kind of refreshing. It's got that clean air feeling, but whoa, the temperatures have plummeted. Let's go next to California. Shingletown, and it's Roger's turn on Coast to Coast and Ghost to Ghost. Roger, go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good, sir. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm calling because my daughter and I were living in a small house here in Northern California. I was working at a prison at the time, and it was about the only place we could find, and that we both felt a presence. My daughter was about 7 years old at the time, mm-hmm. and we felt the presence of, and I felt like it was an old lady, and especially in the morning, it was like somebody was sitting at the table having coffee or something. It was just weird, and we started having weird occurrences around the house, like every time we tried to take a photograph, it had a fog in it, and oftentimes the cameras wouldn't work. And then one time when we were actually just moving in, I was backing up with a refrigerator on a dolly, and I started to fall backwards, and I felt something push me back up, and it wouldn't let me fall. That was kind of weird. And then one night I was asleep, and all of a sudden something slapped me and woke me up, and I woke up and the room was empty. There was nothing there, and that scared me. And then another time I was out on the back porch because it had a washing machine that was out on the back porch, and I was out there. It was an enclosed porch, and I was out there doing some clothes, and I turned and I looked, and out in the backyard, I could see two cowboys standing there, and I swear to God, they were standing there, and they had the full garb on, and one of the guys had chaps, and they had the old looking hats, and I kind of panicked and turned away for just an instant, and when I turned back, they were gone. So I went and talked to the rental manager about it, and she didn't act too surprised, and I gave my notice, and we got out of there.
she knew, didn't she? She knew.
I think she knew something because she wasn't. It was like, you know, it's time for you to leave. It, you know, I said it's time for us to leave. We can't do this, and we did move, and there was definitely something in that house, and I don't even want to drive down the road.
I love it. Great story. Thanks, Raj.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of your Halloween. I call this the Halloween weekend. It doesn't just start and end on a Friday. Let's go to Duke in Dayton, Ohio. Duke, share your story with us.
Hi, George. This goes back into the early 70s. Family lived in an old farmhouse in rural Ohio, and my brother and I shared a bedroom. And he was an extremely heavy sleeper. I was just the opposite, a very, very light sleeper. And time and time again, I would kind of wake up. I wasn't sure if I was dreaming or if I was waking up. And I would see a figure standing at the foot of my bed. And the figure was kind of an older-looking gentleman with kind of a beard and kind of old. I can't even describe the hairstyle. But this went on for, I don't know, probably 6-8 months. And one morning, I mentioned to my mom and dad, and they kind of chuckled, and they didn't really take it too seriously. But it continued to happen over the next, again, 6-8 months. And one day I was talking about it with my mom, and my mom seemed suddenly very interested in the story, and she said, hang on just a second. She went into the next room and brought out a photo album. And she said, do you see anybody in this album that looks like what you think you see? And I had never seen this photo album, and I'd never seen these photographs. And there on this one page of this photo album was a photograph of a man in a casket. And it was the man that I had been seeing. And I said,
that's
him right there. And my mom started crying uncontrollably. Well, it turns out it was her father who had died back when she was, you know, a teenager in the late 30s in a farming accident. And my mom was a very devout Catholic, and so, you know, you were raised Catholic, so I'm sure you know what's coming next. It's time to go talk to the parish priest.
Yep.
Okay. We go to the priest, an old German priest, and I explain the story to him, and he sits there very, very patiently, listens to the story, doesn't say a whole lot, and he finally says to me, okay, the next time he... I should have pointed out to you that every time I'd see this character... When I would wake up and see him, he would kind of disappear, just kind of fade out. Well, so when my mom and I with the priest, he says, okay, next time it happens, I want you to say to the apparition, in the name of Jesus Christ, how can I help you? So, a few weeks later, the guy appears, and I'm, you know, within my wits enough to say to him exactly as the priest had instructed, in the name of Jesus Christ, how can I help you? Well, this time, the guy didn't fade out, George. He went straight up through the roof, straight up, you know, there was an attic over and above the bedroom, and straight up through the roof, and was gone. And after that, I never saw him again.
That's a great story. Great story. I sometimes wonder why... That kind of religious verbiage does that, but it does seem to work. More Ghost to Ghost stories when I come right back on Coast to Coast and Ghost to Ghost AM.